This is Biz. And if hosting One Bad Mother for over 10 years has taught me anything, it's that parenting is hard and nobody gives a shit. So belly up to the low bar, where fine is good enough and you'll never feel alone. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, we belly up to the low bar with author Amy Fusselman. As I have been instructed to say, I think that's the only way we're going to say it, to talk, escape, and invisible labor. Amy Fusselman is the author of 5 books. Maybe I'm just going to do a show where I only say people's last names in exciting different ways. Her latest book is The Means, and it is her first novel. Her 4 previous books were all nonfiction and have been translated into several languages. Her articles and essays have appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and many other places. And she lives in New York City with her family. Amy, welcome to the Low Bar.
Biz, I'm so happy to be at the Low Bar. It's my favorite bar. I'm loving it. Yeah.
It's mine too. I'm not even in good pants today, aka jeans, not in those. I'll leave it up as a mystery.
Yeah. It's an elastic waist day.
Yeah,
for sure.
It really is.
Yeah.
It is. There was a time that would never have been a bar for myself. And now I'm like, oh yeah, fuck it. Yeah. No one's seeing my pants today. You live in New York with family. Who all's in the family? Who all's there?
Well, you're catching me at a nice, like, quiet moment because I'm here. I live with my partner, Frank, and my daughter, who's a freshman in high school, and I have 2 other kids who are returning from college, like, any moment, at my two older sons. And then our nice, peaceful little, like, 3-person idol will come to a crashing halt. And I will be scurrying to the corner trying to get any writing done as usual.
Right. Yeah. How long are they going to be home from college? This is summer break.
Yeah, it's exactly. Summer. It's summer. Since when is summer? Like, you know, May 5th. I don't know, but it's summer for them. Yeah.
I'm really happy to know that the notion of summer break never stops.
Exactly.
That's going to go on for fucking ever.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a lot that have been in your house and are going to return to your house. And I kind of wanted to talk about, and this is based on some of your writing, especially your newest novel, The Means. And that is this notion of dreams, escape. And like, I think about like, so when I had little kids in my house, mine are now, you know, 3rd grade and about to be a freshman in high school. We used to joke, but it wasn't even a joke, the dream of, like, I'd like to get in an accident, but not like a really, not like one that makes me, like, not walk forever, but just enough to be, no one could come to me and ask me for anything, right? And I wouldn't have to feel guilty about it, right? Like, and then I think that evolves as the kids get older. Part of the new novel is this stay-at-home wealthy mom who dreams about living in the Hamptons and having this like beach house. And I mean, it is. Talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, you've got two, three kids running around your house. Like, was the writing the escape? Did you fantasize about being hit by a bus? Like, what?
Totally. That's very relatable to me. I appreciate that. I think that thing that you get when you bring the infant home, you know, is the other thing you're hit with that just doesn't leave is that sort of lust for solitude. Lust.
Yeah.
Like, increasingly also just because as I've continued in my writing, I've become like, you know, naturally like more fussy and cranky as I age. And so I can no longer just write stuff down like, you know, on a post-it I need to sit and I need it to be quiet, you know, like baseline stuff for like, you know, Tolstoy, you know,
right.
Like just sit. I'm not asking for a chair and like not, you know, noise, that's all. But I just can't do it, you know. And so it hasn't, for me, that whole idea of like respite, quiet, that, you know, the book is fiction.
Yeah.
But that whole idea of just wanting to get the fuck away, you know, to sit in a beach chair with a cool, you know, refreshing beverage, I think is something that any parent can relate to.
I agree. And sometimes I think it's not just the beach chair. I mean, it's really any pause in the day. And I'm torn about which way to go here, because part of me wants to talk a little bit more about that. But simultaneously, when you get kids in your house, however they arrive, it can also be like super isolating. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those myths we've talked about, like with stay at home parents, that somehow it's not work and somehow you must have time to have coffee all day, right? And like, that is the complete opposite of what, I mean, you're just constantly having somebody at you making noise.
I know,
noise.
I like that. You're doing the gestures towards your neck. That's where their little teeth are like getting right in there on your jugular. That's exactly it. Yeah.
It's noise. It's being completely isolated, but yet surrounded by fucking noise, whether it's stuff, whether it's actual noise. And I think that's like such an underrepresented form of emotional weight that we don't.
Totally. Totally. I have chalked that up always to just like, well, you know, I'm sort of a solitary weirdo. I like to read and write, you know, maybe it was like more acute for me. But as I've, you know, weighed in with my peers, it's been like, oh, hell no. You know, like, it's horrible. It's horrible for everyone.
It is. Yeah. Isn't that the great universalizer for all of us? Is once we all start talking to each other, we realize it's horrible for all of us.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to be a writer to appreciate that.
No.
Yeah.
No, you don't. And I think, I know that as the kids have gotten older, or at least for me, the what I want to escape with changes, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's, and I wouldn't even know if it's more escape or less escape and more dreaming. And again, as I was joking beforehand, I'm just in the perfect storm of, you know, midlife. Everything is a shit. I should just start all over. And how do you start? But the dream then becomes, how do you start all over? How do you make a change? How do you alter something when all this other stuff has been built up around you? Like, you know, where you live, the kids' schedules, you know, work, whatever that looks like, you know, making a change. It's losing the anonymity of being just a single person in the world with right?
That conversation with so many parents where it's been, I want to move, especially in the pandemic when we were all just like Googling, you know, wherever Bali, you know, and people going, you know, I really want, especially, I mean, New York has had a massive exodus and it's been like, I want to go to XYZ, but this is, and it's always this, but we can't move, you know, Sally. We can't move Sally. Like, Sally's a potted plant. Sally, who's a ninth grader. Do you know what I mean? Like, when did that happen? It was like, really? Yeah. What? I don't know. I just think it's funny. We can't move, you know, and I feel the same way. Yeah, I don't want to move my kid either, but it's just so bizarre.
What is that about? Like, I mean, I'm with you. Like, again, it's that pre-kid take on the world, post-kid take on the world, where like there are a lot of things I'd be like, fuck that, pick that kid up and go.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like what is you're the boss. Don't let that child dictate what you do. You
totally.
Know, like, and we're done. And we'll never have iPads on a plane. Whatever.
Oh God.
Like, you know,
oh, God.
And so how fast it changes. But there is that little voice in me that is still like, so they'll get over it.
Yeah.
Right?
Like,
it's okay. And yet, I think it kind of touches on the other subject of your book, which is this like satirical look at capitalism, right? Like, a lot of the things that keep us in place are our stuff,
Yeah, right. Yeah. The systems. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about when, you know, Gabe was talking about, I know your genius and fails, which I love. And I was trying to think, you know, where, I mean, of course I've had a million fails. I mean, but in general, I was surprised to notice that I think of myself as sort of like, as a parent, I've been more like pass fail, you know, yeah. like my highs are not that high. I'm just sort of like, yeah, she, you know, I probably passed. That's how I feel, you know,
but solid C.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a C, you know, the C, so
I'm
you
a
know,
C C's, kid,
get
yeah.
C's get degrees. That's what I, you know, that's what they told me. I grew up in the Midwest and it was like this whole, but one thing that just speaking of like systems that I think was helpful for me in not being so judgy when I had little kids, like what you're talking about, like judgy towards myself. Cause that's when you're really like in the thick of it is you're like, wait, this, you know, I'm like covered in vomit and like things are, you know, someone's at the door and like, I don't know, I'm going to cry, you know, like what's going on was, but for me was because New York City, and I know you're in LA, so I'm.
I had my first in New York. So,
okay, cool. Yeah. Well, the school thing here was so horrible that I feel like it gave me an early enemy. Like getting my first kid to preschool, I had to line up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Do you know what I mean? With like, I swear to God, this couple was having sex under a blanket, like on Sullivan Street. I kid you not, at like 4 a.m.
Waiting in line for the preschool?
Yes, they were waiting. It was insane. And I was like, so from the get-go, it was like, no matter evil.
Kind of like the idea that they don't even have kids yet.
Oh, yeah,
they were having sex to be that far ahead of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like their conception enrollment.
They just smelled like our parenting desperation. They just smelled that. It was like, oh, this is hot. These people are so like, they're up here at 4, like with their coffee cups, like looking like zombies, like trying to get a fucking slot in the twos program, you know, get out. Yeah. So I was so like, cause I, as a Midwesterner, you know, went to the school down the road that this was such a tournament I was not prepared for. I was like, well, no matter how fucked up I am, this is more fucked up, you know, like truly. So that, I swear to God, that helped me. I just directed all my venom at Miss Lily, you know, like the twos lady. Like it totally wasn't her fault, but I was like, I don't care. You guys suck, you know?
Yeah, no, that actually is a beautiful, like, see, that's why I actually really like that. I feel like every parent has that moment of like beating themselves up until they see or experience something and they're like, oh, fuck this. I mean, your book is satirical, but that whole experience is a farce. I mean, it is like a serious, before I had kids, I was working as a assistant to some VP and some, you know, corporate world. And one of my jobs was to start getting applications for preschools for her. And like her baby had just been born.
Oh,
and that was my first experience of it. And I was like, what is going on? This is insane.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. It's, but you're right. But New York also. And I know I've been doing this long enough to know this is fucking everywhere, but like there was something special about Brooklyn in particular of just like making you feel like shit all the time. Just even taking your kid outside, you know?
I'm great. I mean, I'm like, we are in Manhattan.
Yeah.
We're in the garment district where there are like zero influencers.
Yeah.
Like none. Like negative. You know what
There's
I mean?
There's no like mom board.
Yeah.
Like,
no. In fact, my husband, Frank and I got this place like before we had kids, which is a genius move.
Yes.
Because then you can't ask any questions. It's like, where's the playground? What wasn't on my mind? You know, what's the school? Who cares?
Yeah.
It's cheap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
This is where you live now.
Exactly. Welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't know.
They don't know.
They don't know. Sally doesn't have to be picked up and moved. They're fine.
Exactly.
Sally's got their window.
Yeah. She just, yeah. You know, so I don't know. I think that's the thing, because once you start looking for a place to live, based on the school then you're screwed.
Yeah, you're
screwed.
Yeah. You really and truly are. And that, I think that's anywhere.
Yeah.
Because...
Not gonna go there. Yeah.
Not gonna go through all of that. So you have traditionally written nonfiction.
Wait, I just want to hear you scream my last name one more time.
Fusselman! I'm like in a John Hughes film. I'm like, Fusselman! And I hear something somewhere, and you're, Fusselman! Smoking in the bathroom, Fusselman!
Right, it's like Creedence. Yeah. Oh my God. You are my favorite introducer ever.
Well,
thank you.
I have a select set of skills. And that's it. That's the main one. Why make the shift to nonfiction? I mean, besides the fun of this book. But yeah.
Well, I like to think I think of myself, I'm not a scholar. I'm a writer. I'm very sort of blue. I'm kind of blue collar in my writerliness. So I don't like to think of I'm a nonfiction writer. I'm just I'm a writer. That means I put words together. I have this, I want to try as many ways to put words together as I possibly can before I croak. You know what I mean? I'm in it for I want to go deep and
all
wide. Yeah. So what the fuck are they doing over there in fiction? You know, I can do that or I can try. You know,
Where's your kids' book? I can't wait for that one. Cannot wait for the Amy Fusselman kids' book.
I can't, you know, that's one I don't think I will ever write. But that's a genre. It's a genre, yeah. But so I was let's try that. I like stories. I like jokes. I want to try to write a funny story. So that was my highfalutin.
But it focuses. It's it's satirical, which is great. But I find so much truth in things that the more deeply satirical, the more true I find it to be. You've got this main character, Shelley, and she has this drive to get this place in the Hamptons. And there is such a, what's fun, I think fun, is this level of wealth that is casual. I mean, there's a casual, before you're even halfway into the book, I've already read about them. They bought a lake house when they were just up there for the weekend. And they're this is nice. Let's just get a house, right? And then the money it's just not even a second thought about it. And I'm like, ooh, see, my dreaming. Yeah. That'll fix everything if I had all that money. Mm-hmm. And then you've got all these absurd characters that are involved. There's the tarot financial, read this. I love her, but I also find these people out in the parenting world too. Why? Why? I am sure there's somebody trying to get into a preschool who is using an absurd list of psychic specialists and acupuncturists who are getting them into the preschool.
Yeah.
But Hamptons is, again, very New York-centered experience. Mm-hmm. Why pick this? I mean, were you wanting to write more about money and capitalism, or were you more focused on this woman's experience?
The thing about the Hamptons is it's New York's Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You guys have a real Hawaii, but not to knock the Hamptons, but yeah. So, I mean, it's, I have the lady, my narrator, Shelley, builds this beach house out of shipping containers. And, and there's a lot of pushback and it's not very Hamptons-y and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, there's a lot else going on in the book, but I have had that experience. I have a beach house made out of shipping containers in East Hampton. So, you know, yeah, it's a novel, but I know about that because I went through it. You know what I mean? Like,
there's also this line about invisible, well, not a line. I mean, a major theme is this invisible labor. And I think, like, Stefan, my husband always is like, you know, your resume, given the work that you've done, you know, not only here, but with schools and volunteering and blah, 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 you know, I can run at a full event.
I'm sure.
And I'm sure I was doing that as a job beforehand. Those things just went together. But it's complete. I got paid well before I had children, and now I get paid nothing.
Yes.
But there's that, like, again, touching back on, like, fantasy and dreams, it's this unrecognized set of skills that are developed by, you know, and I do think it falls a lot to women, both traditionally and now.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and all these skills that are being developed but almost can be used for nothing because they're not valid.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Tell me.
I think every time, and because I have three kids, I've been to a gazillion school fundraisers, okay? Like, once you opt out of, like, doing anything else, you still go to the fundraiser because you just do. And those things are, like, can put, like, the Rockettes, like, Broadway to shame. Mm-hmm. To shame. And it's totally women fucking build those things out of nothing, out of fucking glue and glitter.
Yeah.
I just went to my daughter, my ninth graders one, and it was like, God damn. It's shocking. The skills.
And most of those people probably weren't doing it beforehand. It's just that, like, you know, I remember, you know, you suddenly are, like, making a costume for a kid and you're like, oh, I'm actually pretty good at this. How'd I learn how to do that, right? Or, you know, the organizing, or, you know, even if you take a couple of getting through the pandemic and, like, planning grocery runs with as little time as possible, being out in the world with actual, not just winding up with complete fucking garbage in your house where none of it makes anything. Though I can make so much out of chickpeas now, I would like to say.
Awesome.
But I think there's that, like, there's a lot of skill. And then on top of that, there's the emotional. There's a lot of invisible shit.
Totally.
That is, you know, I know we're talking about it more, but I don't know how do we push past this? Do we ever? Is it just burning everything to the ground? Yes.
Oh, that's a good, I mean, I was thinking for a while, like, should I, you know, just for myself, like, in a day, just write down.
Yes.
If I did that, I think I would be, like, homicidal, you know? Like, just every little thing that is, like, I somehow is, you know, I didn't forget is, like, that I'm, for five people, if I wrote it down, I would lose my shit. I would.
It's the line that I didn't forget. Like, we had a thing once on the show where it was fuck to-do list. We're going to do the did it list. And all you just want to write down all the things you did already. But now I think a list could be entitled, I just didn't forget. Right.
Yeah,
I didn't forget to, like, get this pill for my child or, you know, turn this fucking form in.
Mm-hmm. The forms. Oh, the forms. So many forms. The forms.
It's not like it's easier now it's online. It's not like that's any easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we get into our genius and fails, I want to ask about when you were working on this book. Again, a lot of your other work is nonfiction, and one of those books, Savage Park, really talks about safe, like our desire to feel like we're safe all the time. Mm-hmm. And that is just such a parenting stress gym that is completely out of our control for the most part. But I think it's also, it's a false sense of security that we're trying to create. Just like in your fictional world, she's trying to create this, it's maybe not security is not the right word, but this universe in which she will finally feel, right, you know, rested and not anxious and not, you know, all these things. How much are those, you know, thoughts constantly going through your head? How do they tie together in your writing? I don't know. Is it?
Yeah, that's a great observation. I appreciate that. I mean, I feel like that line is really, is true to me in the sense that it's played for comedy in the means.
Yeah.
And more through like money. My goal was really like, what if, I mean, similar to like tracking like micro moments, like what if in a day, like I just peeled back like every interaction I had and tried to find the money in it.
Yeah.
Like, what would that look like? You know, where's the money come from? Who's gaining what? Like what? Because it's going on all the time. And it's ridiculous that like we don't think about it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even
it's as casual as just buying a house when you went to the lake, but it's not that. It's a coffee or it's a tuition or whatever it is. It's something.
And it has a whole, it's a web, you know, in which we're all connected. And it's like the fact that we deny that is bananas. So like the Savage Park like really came out of something similar, which was when my sons, before my daughter was born, my sons were 5 and 2. We went to Tokyo and we found this adventure playground there where the kids were playing with fire, as well as the other. It was the four elements. It was basically like a dirt acre where all the structures were built by children, by children. And they were playing with fire when we got there. We could smell the smoke like as we were approaching. I was like, I was with my friend who had a son the same age. I'm like, what kind of playground is this?
Yeah.
And that was really it was so mind blowing to me that I went back and tried to learn as much as I can. And I view Savage Park really as sort of like, you know, it's a book really of philosophy, but I can't say that because I'm like a housewife. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, but that's what it is. It's like, just, you know, I'm like, you know, I quote some smart people in there, but it's really just like, what the fuck are we doing with this? You know, I think truly of all my experiences, like that playground taught me more about parenting than anything I've gone through, because the whole notion of really witnessing and tolerating your children's risk taking rather than injecting yourself into it to prevent an accident. Like, you're sort of walking this line of what's my tolerance for their risk, you know, knowing that they need to fucking take them, you know, like that it's horrible.
It's that word, you have just put the perfect word on it. It's tolerance. I have zero tolerance. But like, so my children are used to me saying like, Raiden will be, even when they were really little and they'd be at the top of the slide and like not on the slide, but up on the thing, they'd be like, Mama, look at me. And I'd say, I'm so proud of you, baby girl, but I'm not looking. I can't look, you know, like Ellis will be like, I'm going to go scootering. And I'm like, you are ill-equipped to do that, kid. That is not what your skill is. But I'm like, go for it. I just can't, like, my tolerance is I want them to do it, but I know I can't watch it. And that's okay. So they're just going to have to get used to that. But like we, the kids go to a school where they've got like this, you know, small farm, quote unquote, it is just full of bricks and nails in some places.
Oh,
and they do,
awesome.
They do put shit up in the tree and I'm just like, I'm not watching. And like, I'm not watching. Though I did go in one time with some of the older kids and I was like, they were all playing with magnifying glasses. And I was like, you guys know how to start a fire with a magnifying glass, don't you? And then I walked away from the teacher saying, you're welcome. And they all still do it. But I agree. That is a hard thing, especially in a culture here where we're watching everything and everything is a potential chance to call it a crime. You know, like you left your kid in the car while you went to the ATM, you can still see your kid, but somebody called the police on you. Like, I mean, I'm like, what
Yeah, not only the legal stuff, but the mom shaming.
Yeah, the mom shaming. Well, all of that goes right back to the mom. Oh, your kid's not wearing socks?
Yeah,
the baby's not wearing socks in the stroller? I'm like, my child has pulled them off and left them up and down 85th Street. Yeah. But, like, it doesn't matter. My kid is fine.
Yeah.
Right? But
what?
I can't believe I didn't put socks on the baby.
Oh, I know. I mean, that's partly why your pod has so much resonance is I feel, who are these people who just feel like they can, like, you know, weigh in on your friggin', I don't know.
I think there are less than we think. I do think there are less than we think. And I think, I'm hoping that we chip away at it by just being brutally honest with each other, because everybody just wants to hear the other person say, my kid, puked all over the bride, or everybody wants to hear their kid's not sleeping. And again, no one tells you that kid's going to shit in the tub. You're going to get in that tub. You are going to get in that tub later that day, right? Like, this is all we want to hear.
Truly.
Right? And so, if we would just be honest about it, then maybe the other person, we all respond. People get judgy when they're scared they're gonna get judged, and chip.
All right. Yeah, it's compassion.
Yeah. We are in short supply, Amy Fusselman. Have you heard about how to be fine? Do you feel betrayed by the advice of wellness gurus? Yes. And are you sick of being told to visualize your goals, pull up a chair, take a breath? Then I, Biz, have just the podcast for you. How to Be Fine is half advice show, half cultural critique, and one wild ride through the world of wellness. Join podcast besties Kristen Meinzer and Jolinta Greenberg as they dissect the inner workings of the betterment industry and offer up some advice along the way. Their goal? To help you get a little closer to fine, which is a perfect combo for one bad mother where fine is good enough. Listen to How to Be Fine every Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trans representation in media is at an all-time high, with trans entertainers gracing the screens large and small.
But trans voices, especially Black trans voices, are rarely centered in our own stories.
That's why we bring you a new limited series called We See Each Other, the podcast, co-hosted by me, journalist, and better half of the Max Fun podcast, Fanti, Trayvell Anderson,
and me, award-winning journalist and media personality, Char Jocelle.
All of it is based on my book, We See Each Other, a Black trans journey through TV and film.
Now listen, folks, we're having a very different kind of conversation. It's giving kitchen table talk.
Mm-hmm. We get into the discourse, honey. Tune into We See Each Other, the podcast at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get Slayworthy audio.
Let's do a few genius and fails. I'll make things easy, and I'll start by sharing my genius.
Cool.
And my genius, it's been a very, very long year with a lot of personal things happening in my life. And I'm not a napper, but this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and in fact, yesterday, after the kids were at school, I just crawled back in the bed and I slept like a fucking rock until it was, 12, 1 o'clock. And it was the best thing I've done. No guilt. The genius is that I've somehow reached some place where I'm like, fuck it. This is what the body needs.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna. In fact, I'm gonna tell everybody I did it.
Totally.
And it was fucking best. Do not deprive. Then I called my therapist. So that, it's very simple.
Yeah.
But I need it and I still need it. And That's was
awesome.
Me. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
that's you. Awesome.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh,
my God, that's fucking genius.
Anything that you need a high five for, you'd like to be seen for?
I was trying to think. I can't think of course, like any genius moments. I'm sure there have been some.
Yeah, but you're about to have.
But I'm a C, you know, so.
Yeah, but you're about to have your house full of your children again.
Yeah.
Which deserves a high five.
That's
for just
true.
Emotionally being open to that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm very psyched. I'm very psyched. I really enjoy my sons. They're awesome.
Hi, One Bad Mother. This is a genius. My daughter's daycare sends cupcakes home every time a child has a birthday, which means we get cupcakes sent home about 3 times a month. And they're sent home on small paper plates that the parents provide, which means they roll around or roll off the seat or roll off my child's lap, and usually the floor or the seats, or my child ends up with frosting all over. So when it was my turn, I got paper cups instead of paper plates so that you could just put the cupcake right in the cup and put the cup in the cup holder, and there's no rolling, there's no smearing, and when you get home, you can just dump it out of the cup and let your child eat it. It's a small thing, and I know it's dumb, but I'm really tired of cleaning frosting off of my car, and I was really proud of the hack that I came up with. So, anyway, dumb little genius. Thanks for listening. You have a great day. Bye-bye.
Woohoo!
I know! That's such a genius.
Totally. Totally.
There should be like a 50 car line salute at pickups, you know?
That is like a techno hack of the highest order. Totally.
What I love is that in thinking of capitalism, I'm like, you could make that silicone, buddy.
Exactly.
That silicone cupcake cut.
Yeah.
And sell it. Overprice it.
Yeah. It's the cupcake caddy. You heard it here. $10. Yeah.
That's right. Actually, they would also be easier if you were just looking to eat the icing off the cupcake. You could put it in the cup like an ice cream cone. Do you know how to eat cupcakes? Have you ever seen a kid? This is something I learned, and it's where, so I was at like, you know, some fucking kids party and there were cupcakes, and I watched somebody pull the bottom of the cupcake off, put it on top of the icing like a sandwich, and eat it. And it was fucking genius.
That's brilliant.
I will only eat cupcakes this way now.
That's brilliant.
It's good.
Wow.
I know. All right. Failures. Gosh, I had a few. Now I'm blanking out. I'll just go with one of my old reliable fails. and that is the fact that we don't wash our youngest. We had gotten into a reasonable habit of them taking a shower once a week. Okay. That's the best we can do. They don't stink. Puberty hasn't hit. They're not that stinky. And I don't want to deal with it because the child still wants me to be in there while they're in the shower. And I don't want to be, to be honest. And there's also, everybody who's been listening knows that since spring break, they dyed their hair green. And because we don't shower often, it's just gross and weird. It's a weird, weird situation. And I just realized today that we just did not do that week shower. So now we're going on 2 weeks.
Nice.
And there have been some field trips where we went to the tide pools and such. So I'm like, there is a level of smell, but because they're so gross, it makes me feel like I don't have to change their sheets. It's just gross on gross. So
yeah.
I'm really nailing the personal hygiene bar for my youngest. It's great. Fail.
You suck.
You're just riding the dirt wave. I think you're just, you're surfing that well.
One day they'll care.
Yeah.
One day they'll care
one
enough.
One day they will. Yeah.
To want to shower themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll be picking out the body wash. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some musk. Can't wait. All right. Now, you were setting us up for epic fails, so I'm ready.
I was. This is sort of like a global fail. It should be. But it's... I was thinking about how, like, probably my fails have been when I haven't been able to listen well to my kids. And I had particular problem this is for, again, as a Midwesterner in New York, I still define myself as that. They had this thing here, which was another thing which is new to me culturally, which is summer camp.
Oh, yeah.
And as somebody who's striving to put these little words on the page, what could be more attractive than sending your kid off to like a joyful 6-week experience, in the woods while you finish your writing homework? Oh, nothing could be more attractive than that.
Certainly not whatever your child's opinion on summer camp might be.
Yeah. So this one summer, my daughter, who's like the most kind of, she's very social. I thought this is going to be like, no problem. Like I did all the due diligence. I went to visit, I made sure the guy wasn't an axe murderer. Although, do you ever really know? No.
You won't know.
But
not
until you
don't
know.
Start making out.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
That's
you don't
when
know.
You discover it.
Yeah. And I set her up with her little friend who had moved away. So it's going to be like a joyous reunion. And then she gets there, but she didn't want to go.
Yeah.
She didn't want to go. And I was like, Susan's going to be there. You love Susan. It's, look at all this. It wasn't even one of those sports camps where you had to go swimming every day. It was like, do you want to go to the Pottery Barn or do you want to pet a cow? You know what I mean? Like, it was like, I was like, she's going to love it. And I need to finish this fucking manuscript in 3 weeks. You know what I mean? So she gets there and I just keep getting these calls. She's like miserable. She's miserable. She and Susan, literally, they spent like everyone around them is like at a rave. They're just like loving this camp. And my daughter like spent her, 3 week period. Like she painted new lines on the tennis court. She should have been like union. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have no idea. Like, she just was like, I hate this. I don't know. I didn't get a camper. I didn't get one. And when I hear these parents who like send their kids off for 8 weeks every summer while they do drugs in Ibiza, I'm just like, I just wanted to finish my homework.
Fuck.
But
here's the thing. All I'm hearing throughout this is, I've heard a couple of things. One, the amount of work you put into planning this trip, this summer camp, so that it would work really well for your kid. I mean, the friend who moved away, that's pretty epic.
Yeah.
Two, I really like the idea that the Pottery Barn is actually the Pottery Barn. And they're going to like look at furniture and quilts. And then they go out and they like touch a cow. The fail is that you're still thinking about it.
I know.
Good. Fucking
you're right.
Eat you forever.
You're right.
Even if your child has forgiven you, even if they have like wound up thinking it was the best summer of their life, you forever will get to hold that little nugget.
Help me release it, Biz.
I absolve you of this guilt.
Thank you. My summer camp crime.
I like that you're like, we don't have a camper. It was like, we didn't have a napper. And like, people would say they had like 2 hours during the day. And I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. That can't be real. So,
Yeah. I feel for you. But sleep deprivation is a powerful thing. That's all I'll say.
Well, so is a deadline. So is a writing deadline. You make the best choices that you can make at the time.
Truly. Yes.
All right. Now I'm really excited about this this fail. This is enjoyable.
Hi, I'm calling with a fail. My kids have been sick and home for basically 10 days, like most of a week and a Monday and a Friday. And today I was driving home from work and I got home and my husband's car was not in the garage and the kids weren't home. And I looked down and my husband was calling me asking me where I was and why didn't I get the kids from daycare today. Because I forgot that my children were at daycare instead of at home sick with my husband. So that's a fail. Thanks for the hotline. You guys are doing great. I hope everyone remembers their children today.
Oh. I know, isn't that good?
Oh my God.
See,
poor woman.
That is the sort of thing we all need to be hearing. I have forgotten my child.
Yeah.
At least, you know, that is almost a rite of passage,
mm-hmm.
right? And when they've been home and sick,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, of course, the joke here is that you should feel horrible for having left your children at daycare, not knowing. Oh, it's the best.
Oh, yeah. They were happy. They got to eat another cupcake out of a cup. That's what they
right.
were doing while she was going to pick them up. Yeah.
That's right. It was fun. I'm sure there are no one scarred for life. No one got sent to summer camp when they didn't want to go.
So. Just another stab, this.
Well, Amy Fusselman, it has been a pleasure.
Oh, my goodness.
To have you here.
Thank you so much. This is such a joy.
Well, thank you. Speaking of joys, we're going to link people up to where they can. Everybody knows where to get books. But
on the internet.
We
so
like
crazy.
To make things easier because we're all fucking tired. but the means is such a treat. It is a treat. It is a delicious, hilarious treat. It's really funny and fun, as is Savage Park. Not as hilarious, but it is. It has its moments.
Yeah. But, for a philosophy housewife yes. book. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Housewife philosophy book. It's very, very poignant. Look for t-shirts.
There you go.
That's how we know it's a philosophy, because there'll be a t-shirt for it. Thank you so much,
Thank
Amy.
You so much. This was so fun. Yay.
It was.
Thank
Yay.
You for your work. Appreciate
oh, thank
it.
You. Thank you.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you. I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone. I love you. I love you.
The Legend of Zelda. Tears of the Kingdom.
Diablo 4.
Final Fantasy 16.
Street Fighter 6.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Starfield.
Spider-Man 2.
Master Detective Archives Rain Code for Nintendo Switch? No? Is that just me?
It's a huge time for video games.
You need somebody to tell you what's good, what's not so good, and what's amazing.
I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton. We're the hosts of Triple Click, a video game podcast for anyone who likes games.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
All right, everybody, we're back, and it is time to listen to a mom have a breakdown.
Hi, One Bad Mother. This is definitely a rant. I am a mom of three little boys, and I'm a high school arts teacher, and I just found out that after 20 years of teaching that my position, you know, our enrollment has been going down in the arts ever since COVID, and my position is no longer available at my building. And I haven't been at this building for 20 years, but, like, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I love it. Like, it's my passion, and I just love it. And I am so distraught about what I'm going to do, because I teach a very niche subject matter, and there's nothing around for what I do, and I have my principal license, so now I'm looking at administrative work, and I know I would do a great job in that role, but, you know, it's really difficult to make a career change, because even though it's still like an education, like, that's what it is, and it's just so hard, because my future is so uncertain right now, and I need to be working. Like, we can't afford to just have my partner work, so it's a grueling process, and just not knowing, you know, what's out there, and I'm trying to be so optimistic about it, but it's really hard to go now to a school that every day I know I'm not going to be returning, and I have to tell my students soon about this, and they're going to feel sad about it, and my coworkers, everybody is really, you know, unhappy about it, and I just get pity eyes all day at work, and I'm doing my best with it all. I know something good has to come out of this. Like, I have to land on my feet somewhere. It's just a lot when you are really hoping to just finish out your career in a certain way, and I think it's flipped on its head. So, okay, thank you for listening. I love the show. It really helps me get through these rough times, and I appreciate the community that you all have created. Have a great day. You're doing a good job, and I'm trying to. Okay, bye.
Okay, you are doing a good job. You're doing a great job. This is a horrible situation that is happening right now. Because, you know, and I think one of the things that makes it so hard, you know, you've got three little kids, and that's enough right there to make everything challenging. And I don't mean that like flippantly. I mean, that is a lot of noise, a lot of emotional work, a lot of actual labor in making all of that just happen every day. And you had this job that you loved. And when we have a job or a hobby that we do, or just anything that we can go to daily, that is a break, a joyful break from our role as parent, to lose that, I think, runs the risk of being scarier than the job search that's going to come. I mean, that is a hard thing to lose. You're losing something that you love. And so you are absolutely justified in feeling all of these feelings that you have about it. Career changes are not easy. They're not easy before kids, and they certainly aren't easy after kids. It feels like your time is completely absorbed, and what time is left to pursue the career, to find a new job, to put the effort into finding something that will be an adequate replacement, as opposed to the sheer panic of I have to be doing something that's going to make money, right? Like, I can't justify taking off 2 weeks. I can't justify, you know, spending 2 months. Look, I can't justify a year. And every set of circumstances are different, but what's not different is the stress that we can feel about it. We get all fucked up in our heads about our self-worth and what we are entitled to pursue for ourselves once we become a parent, because so many needs get put ahead of our own, and then that can become a real habit, a real rut. And so something like a career change is like the opposite of what works in that environment. So you are, of course, you're uncertain, and of course you're upset, and of course you're stressed. And, you know, give yourself, if you can, give yourself the time to grieve this. You know, there's no advice to be given here, and we don't do advice. The main thing is, I see you, and this is so hard, and it's so sad, you know, and it is scary, you know, on top of all the other things that you deal with on a daily basis with kids in your house. So I see you, and I want you to know that you're doing a good job, and I know that you're going to continue to do a good job as each moment presents itself. You have got this. Everybody, you also have this. You know, it is a lot A lot. A big show of whining. It's a lot. And that hasn't changed. I mean, it may have changed in what it looks like or how it feels, but, you know, every day we wake up and we start doing it, and then we're presented with moments where, like, if we give ourselves the time, we start reflecting on it, and I don't know if that's always a good idea. So that can be dangerous. But it's important that we do it. We allow ourselves to be unhappy with it, to be happy with it, to be confused, to be frustrated, to be hopeful. All of those things deserve space to be felt. And it can be hard because sometimes we're so haggard and broken that, like, feeling is really hard to sit with. So, you know, go do a Teresa. Go stand in the mirror and look at yourself and say, I am a self, because you are. And don't feel bad if you're not feeling quite like a self today either, okay? You're all doing a remarkable job. And I will see you next week back here at the Low Bar.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, our producer, Gabe Mara, my husband, Stephen Lawrence, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org/OneBadMother. For information about live shows, our book, and press, please check out OneBadMotherPodcast.com.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, go to MaximumFun.org/join.
Well, Daddy, baby, fussing by, got low down mama blues. Oh, said Daddy, baby, fussing by, got low down mama blues.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.